Welcome to the Whole and Healthy Vibe podcast, a show to help you shift away from the diet and dogma towards a whole and healthy life.
We're your hosts, Laura and Kezia, health coaches, cake lovers, and body positive warriors. Let's get the show started.
Hi everyone, welcome to the Whole and Healthy Life podcast. Today I am so delighted to be joined by Becca Verlander, who is one half of the Mad Woman podcast and who is really passionate about mental health, and I'm so excited to be talking to her today. We've been emailing for a good while now, haven't we, about yeah. setting this up and just about chatting about mental health in general. And if people listen to, I think it's probably by the time this one goes out, the last one that I did with Kezia, I was talking a bit about some of the struggles that I've had personally. And we just really wanted to chat about that, and obviously to chat about Becca's journey, which I think is really interesting, and some of the things that you've dealt with as well. So first of all, welcome to the Whole and Healthy Life podcast.
Thank you.
And would you like to tell our listeners just a little bit about yourself and a bit about the Mad Woman podcast as well?
I would love to. Thanks so much, Laura. So my name's Rebecca, and I am one half of the Mad Woman podcast, and I'm super passionate about mental health. And particularly, I'm interested in anxiety and the kind of less well-known condition of intrusive thoughts. And this for me all started because of my own personal experience with kind of mental ill health. So I was about 15, 16, and I started getting really bad intrusive thoughts. And not many people know what intrusive thoughts are, mm-hmm. but they're essentially recurring unwanted thoughts. They're deeply distressing, and they create a vicious cycle that it's actually very, very debilitating, and it can really stop you living a normal life. And people really misunderstand OCD, and it's a form of OCD. Mm-hmm. They kind of think it's all about being tidy or clean, or, you know, turning lights on and off, and that's completely to misunderstand it. Mm-hmm. It's actually fundamentally, in my case anyway, was about an obsession of whether I was good, whether I was sane, who I was, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I had this when I was about 15, 16, and it just got worse and worse. And the themes of the intrusive thoughts for me changed. They kind of started off being like kind of violent images, and then they changed again and again. And, you know, for some people, they can be things like, if you're a new mother, you suddenly worry, like, what if I drop my newborn baby? And then you start to worry, oh, why am I thinking this? Is there something wrong with me? Or if you're someone that drives a lot, you might worry about hitting someone with your car, and then you stop driving, you stop going to public spaces. Mm-hmm. So you can see how it very quickly descends into something that completely stops you living a normal life.
Yeah.
And I had this for about 2 years really badly. I didn't tell anyone, because like with many people that have mental health problems, I was scared of the stigma, but particularly with intrusive thoughts, you're scared you're going to be labeled as violent, or you're going to be labeled as completely insane, and that you need to be removed from your family and that kind of thing. So it was really hard to open up about it. But yeah. In the end, I did. And I was very lucky that my family were really supportive, and I managed to get some help.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, just to mention as well, you're 22, aren't you, right now?
Yeah, that's yeah, right. Yeah.
And just I think for a start, just you having the maturity that you have at your age, I think in talking so openly about this, I think is really inspiring. But just to have been through that, and I mean, what was it for you then? What made you feel able to talk about it? What kind of changed for you so that you could talk about it and get some help?
Yeah, well, I think that's a really good question, because a lot of people don't ever talk about it, and they live their whole lives in a kind of state of constant anxiety, fear, often with suicidal thoughts, and it I think that's one of the first barriers, is how do you start talking about it? Mm-hmm. For me, I was really lucky that my parents are fantastic, and I trusted them. And in the end, I was so exhausted that I told my dad, and mm-hmm. he was great. He just said, okay, I think you're unwell and you should go and see a doctor. And so that's how I kind of started talking about it. Mm-hmm. But actually it took years to open up to people beyond my immediate family and friends. And I think for other people, it can be so difficult, because there's such a lack of awareness around mental health in general, but specifically with these less well-known conditions, that people just don't know what's going on. And so they don't know that it's something that is a mental health problem, that they can seek help to try and overcome it and to try and live mm-hmm. with it. So I think it can be a real barrier.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, it's just obviously you're highlighting intrusive thoughts, which are, I mean, I definitely didn't know anything about yeah. them really at all, and you've mentioned a few examples, and I think obviously the one that stuck out for me was around the new mum, because I know that I've certainly been there
yeah.
with that.
Yeah.
And not to the point of where I would, you know, say that it was intrusive thoughts or that it was PND mm-hmm. or anything like that, but I think mm-hmm. it's such a, you know, all different degrees of mental well-being or mental ill health, there's such a variation, and I think there's such an unawareness
absolutely.
Of it. It's really sad that it's no matter where people are on the scale of however bad it is or however bad it feels to them, it's just such a difficult thing to talk about and to get help for.
Definitely. I think you're so right. And it is a spectrum with any of these things. And something like when, you know, you're a new mother, especially if you're someone that's has a particular sense of responsibility. So a lot of experts in this form of OCD talk about people that have particular sense of responsibility, that are particularly ethical, that scrutinize themselves a lot. Perhaps those who are creative and imaginative can experience those thoughts because they might have one. And people get these thoughts all the time, but it's those people that actually say, what does this mean? And they start going down a kind of rabbit hole of trying to understand the thought. So it's a really common thing. And actually about 1.2 to 2% of the population will experience intrusive thoughts. So it can happen. And I think you're right. It's so hard to talk about. And that's why I think it's really brave that you are talking about it on the platform that you have, because it takes people, like I kind of said this to you when I emailed, but it takes people who are in those positions of power or influence to start talking about it. But it's really, really hard, especially if you're a leader of some sorts, because you're expected to have perfect mental health all the time. But everyone has mental health. Everyone has mental health. And I think that's forgotten. We have good mental health sometimes, bad mental health sometimes, but everyone has it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, just a couple of interesting things that have jumped up for me from what you just said. Mm-hmm. Because you said there that to some degree, you know, we all have intrusive thoughts from time to time. It's when does, and I mean, I think this is a general thing as well, because this is something I've been asking myself recently with some of the ways that I've felt, is when does something become, you know, because I think there's a scale, isn't there, in terms of severity, I suppose, but when does something become a problem that actually needs, where you actually need to seek help? Because I think for me, and you know, just to very, very quickly summarise some of like my experiences with it, I think certainly after I had my little boy and with his heart problems and being premature and the sleep deprivation and everything like that, I think I can remember like just sobbing my heart out and screaming and just being in such a state.
Yeah.
And not really knowing. I can remember going to the doctors for his checkup and expecting, in fact, this is probably the first time I've ever actually shared this, and actually expecting me to be asked how I was feeling and just not being asked at all by this doctor. Like, I remember coming out and I got so angry. I remember telling the receptionist, like, you know, well, I want to complain, you know. I was so upset because I think I'd been working myself up to telling this doctor how I was feeling and getting some help, and it just wasn't there. But I think there was this whole thing in my mind, is like, when does it become like, was I bad enough to ask for help? Was it severe enough to ask for help? And even, and again, I think that's sometimes a difficult one, because often when we're just having when it's just kept internalized and we're not actually talking about it, I think that might be something that other people consider, you know, at what point do I actually need to go and see someone about this? Have you got any advice? Sorry, I've warbled there, but
no, that's so interesting. And I'm like, first of all, I'm so sorry to hear that. I can't even imagine how difficult that must have been, because you've got all the things there about you're trying to deal with the situation in hand, but also you've got, you're your own person. You're going to have your own fears and doubts and anxiety around that. And you're trying to balance all these different things. And then you've got the physical emotions and hormones and everything running around. Yeah. So that must have been a really tough time. So I'm sorry to hear that the professionals weren't good enough. And that's one of the problems as well, that we've got fantastic healthcare staff out there, and a lot of them still don't have the training and expertise they need in mental health. And you need to have it in every level in the NHS. It shouldn't just be mental health specialists that are aware of mental health problems. I think when it comes to, when do I start using labels? When do I start seeking professional help? Yeah. Are these labels useful? What's the actual scientific definition? It's really, really tricky. I mean, I should probably caveat this to the fact I'm not an expert. I have no qualifications, only my experience. But I've done a lot of reading and I'm really interested in it. So what I would say I start to kind of learn about it is that, in terms of knowing what's right for you, I think you use this as well a lot in your writing and advice. You've got to be the expert in yourself.
Yeah.
And if it feels helpful to you to start using those labels and to seeking professional help, trust that instinct. You're probably right. The other thing I'd say is that some people have started to put definitions on things like intrusive thoughts around how many hours a day it's stopping you living your normal life, or how severe these thoughts are. I think it comes down to how much it affects your quality of life.
Yeah.
And a really interesting point on that is that the World Health Organization actually listed OCD as one of the top 10 most debilitating illnesses when it comes to diminishing quality of life. So it can really affect the way you live your life. So I think it's noticing what's normal for you, mm-hmm. how things have changed. And for me, I start using those labels when they feel helpful to me, and I drop them when they stop being helpful. And yeah. I think moment I would say I still have intrusive thoughts, I still have anxiety, I wouldn't say I have depression anymore. But that being said, my boyfriend always teases me that I'm, you know, just a bit more down than other people, or I'm a bit more mad than other people and that kind of thing. And I think part of it is just what's normal for you as well. Yeah. But I think it's, yeah, it's what feels right to you. But if you're not using those labels because you're scared of how people will treat you, then I guess you've got to start thinking about how you can tackle that, whether, you know, whether you really care about these people, or maybe it really does matter. Maybe it's in a professional sense. That's mm-hmm. the other really hard sphere of your life. It's how do you talk about these things at work? There's yeah. just not enough support there. And even if you're self-employed, you have a kind of way that you need to show yourself. And it's how can we be, I think Brené Brown talks about this a lot, and I know you're a big
yes,
fan.
Yes, absolutely, yeah.
How can we show that vulnerability is powerful? How can we show that actually us saying, I'm human, I'm not perfect, and that's okay, and I still can really help you and support you whilst I also have these imperfections? That's, for me anyway, the area we need to move towards, but I think it's really difficult.
Yeah, and absolutely. And I think, you know, everything that you just said there, I think especially about mental health awareness throughout healthcare services, because mm-hmm. what I found as well is that often when people have a physical issue, there's a mental yeah. component to that as well.
Absolutely.
You know, that just doesn't get addressed, and that can sometimes get worse if it's not addressed. And I mean, I guess for a lot of people who are listening to this, I think the most common things that people would say mental health-wise that they're affected by is anxiety, depression, and stress, mm-hmm. something mm-hmm. around that kind of level. And I mean, in terms of, and again, I obviously know that you're not an expert, but I think you're obviously well up on this stuff. But in terms of those people who might feel that it is helpful for them to put a label on that, and mm-hmm. and I know because I've actually, I mean, that just goes to show some of the stuff that you do, but I googled depression when I yeah. wasn't feeling yeah. great, and started reading up about it and kind of looking at what options were, and I was really interested because I started reading it for myself, but then I was like, oh, I'm reading this as Laura from Wholeheartedly Healthy right now, because yeah. there's some really yeah. interesting things around how it's treated, and I mean, in terms of treatments, and I know mm-hmm. that it ranges from like talk and therapy, doesn't it, to antidepressants mm-hmm. and things like that, and you know, some people have, I think some people feel shame around taking mm-hmm. medications. How would you kind of respond to that? Because I think it is something that's a bit of a stigma still.
Yeah, and I think you're right. I think there is a stigma around that. I think in terms specifically of medication, that for my, in my personal experience and in my personal kind of own self, I would never just take medication. I'd want to make sure that there was some kind of therapy there, support there, that you're building the right environment around you to have good mental health, and that you've yeah. got the right mindset and all of those other things in place, because all of these things work best, I think anyway, in combination with different kinds of supports. That being said, I think there should be no shame in saying, I want to take this medication, it's going to help me, it's going to maybe kickstart my recovery, or I'm going to use it in combination with XYZ. Mm-hmm. I think as always with these things, seeking professional advice from people that are experts in that particular condition that you have is a really great place to start. And I'd also caution which kind of forums you look for advice, because there's lots of different kind of advice out there. But what I really love about your podcast is that it's no bullshit. It's like cutting through all that kind of stuff. It's yeah. like actually be an expert in you, find good, solid advice that's going to actually help you, and know that you're not alone, and know that you can seek that help. Yeah. So I think that that's really important. But there's a whole bunch of great stuff out there for people, but it's really hard to tap into because a lot of people don't know where to go. And I've heard so many awful stories of people going to their GP and saying, I'm not feeling that great. And then the GP kind of says, well, what's wrong? And they don't know how to kind of finish that conversation. They don't feel like they know anything about it. And they'll leave that room feeling they haven't properly explained themselves. And there are thousands of brilliant GPs out there that are not like that, and I've met loads of them. Mm-hmm. But I think that can be a real challenge as well, when you approach a professional, if they make you feel silly for bringing it up, that's really, really tough, and then it puts you off getting help again.
Yeah, absolutely. And for people who do face that, because I think that is quite common, yeah. is it around asking to see a different doctor? Because that's certainly what I did when I was
that's great idea.
When I wasn't feeling great, although I think what happened for me is that I started feeling better, I think, by the time I would have actually gotten around to seeing someone. But yeah, it's, I mean, it's such a, it is just such an interesting thing because it's something that I think affects everybody to some degree. But that is just, it's like a massive missing, it's like the elephant in the room that's just not getting talked about. Certainly when it comes, and I know that there's, you know, people are having those conversations more. And I mean, I'd love to know, why did you want to set up a podcast talking about this? Because I think that's one of the most amazing things is to really publicly put out not just your journey, but around raising the awareness of certainly of the conditions that you suffered from with intrusive thoughts. But you also talk about, is it your partner on the podcast, Ruth, talks about anxiety, is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Ruth Lyons, she's brilliant. She has the fantastic 1,000 Ways to Be Fearless podcast blog, and she knows loads about anxiety, and she's just fantastic. So yeah, we both do that, and she's kind of one of the reasons that I wanted to sort of start this whole journey. I went from being in a place where I couldn't tell anyone about this because I was so scared, to starting to get help for myself. And then when I left university, I was invited back to Cambridge to give a talk on my experiences because I'd started to talk about them a bit more. Mm-hmm. And I did, and it was really scary, but the response was overwhelming, and I felt really good about it, not just because it helped mm-hmm. me kind of get some agency back. I was getting something from my mental health that was good. There was a weird kind of silver lining there. Yeah. So there was that. And also I had people coming up to me saying, oh, I didn't know that was a thing. I think I have that. Yeah. It was only a few people, but that was in just one room. And I thought, okay, well, it's already worth it.
Yeah.
And then when my friend started this blog, and then also I'm a huge fan of your podcast, as you know, and something like that, but specifically for anxiety and intrusive thoughts, something that is just like having a bunch of good friends round in your kitchen, and you're having a chat, and you're just saying, this is who I am, this is what I'm going through right now. Anyone else feel the same?
That's what
that's what people
need, isn't it? And I think, you know, that's what certainly what Kezia and I try and do with this podcast, as well as like the stuff that we do with our individual stuff. But I think, powerful when it's other women who are just normal and having like normal experiences in life and stuff. And can have those conversations, because, and like I said before, and I think anxiety and stress is something that's come up a lot, that are certainly in sort of like my online communities and stuff seems to be coming up, and dealing with that at work and dealing with stigma of that at work. And have you got any advice, I mean, when it comes to, you know, perhaps having to take some time off, or perhaps having to manage, well, I suppose it's just managing life in general, have you got any kind of advice for people around, you know, if you know that you're in a perhaps in a phase where it's things aren't great and they're seeking help, but how can they kind of support themselves to function as best as they can in life?
Definitely. Well, I think in terms specifically of work, it's finding a manager or a colleague that you trust to kind of begin that conversation, and just, you know, having the confidence in yourself that this is really important to me, and actually I'm in a weird kind of way being a warrior, being part of that change, being part of that movement by doing this, and framing it in an empowering way rather than, oh, I have this weakness, I better admit it. Actually, you know what, there's this thing about me, I'm going through it right now, but at some point it'll be someone else in the office, or at some point it'll be someone else in my life. And me speaking out right now is going to make it that little bit easier for them. Yeah. And seeing it as part of a wider thing where other people are getting involved, other people are speaking out, can make you feel less alone and less isolated.
Yeah.
Hopefully people work in places where there'll be some people that understand that, they should do, but we both know it's not always going to be like that. Yeah. So I think remembering and reminding yourself that ultimately your opinion of yourself matters most, and that if they react strangely, that's about their own insecurities, that's their own ignorance. And you can hopefully have a conversation with them that helps educate them and that will improve the place that you work for in general. I've found that doing this podcast at work, people have asked me about it, they've been really curious, and it's been great, it's been supportive. But I also am aware of the fact that if I work somewhere else, some people might find it strange that I'm putting all this personal information about myself online, that I'm doing this thing in my spare time, that, okay, are you not well? Can you not do your job? And those are worries I do sometimes still have. But I think it's really important that I help people, because I feel a lot better now, and I want to give something back. I want to help others. Yeah. More generally in your kind of wider life, I think that remembering that, like I said before, everyone is going to go through something like this at some point. And if you can be that person that speaks out first, you're making it easier for other people. You're kind of giving them permission to speak up. I've had friends say to me since doing the podcast, thank you so much for putting that out there, putting it on Facebook or putting it here. It's really helped me have conversations with my family or with my partner. And that is great. And you've got to take those moments and ignore the people that are saying, why are you doing that? Or do you have reason, or do you know what you're doing? You just got to think, okay, they don't understand, that's fine.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And sorry, I was going to say something. I had a really good question and it's gone totally out of my head. what I was going to ask was, in terms of, I think something again that often I see written around mental health is about self-care and how you can, and again, because I can only really speak from my experience, so it might be completely different for other people's, but I know when I get, like, I can feel myself starting to kind of go down into the depths. And I know for me that self-care is really important, and that was really where, you know, in the kind of after I had Finley, where self-care really became something that I became passionate about, because it really helped me get out of the place where I felt like I was in and where I was going down to. Have you got any tips for people around self-care in terms of mental health? And, you know, does it help, or is it just one of those things that we're told that we should do because, you know, stop being a problem, go and care for yourself? What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, it definitely helps. And I would definitely say that your blog has been a great place for me to get loads of tips and that kind of thing. So I love all your stuff on self-care. Oh, and I really like how you recently described it as being, I think, did you say it was like being at the bottom of the ocean? Yeah. That was a really great image. And I that really chimes with me. I think, I mean, I'm a huge, like, I love all the kind of routine information that's out there. I love changing my routines up, having good habits, that kind of thing. I have a whole list of daily practices I try and do every day that help me. They won't necessarily work for everyone, but I find that they're important. I think my three big kind of areas that I use to help myself, and everyone's different, but I think there will be a lot of things there that people can draw upon, would be, the first thing is that knowledge is power. So educate yourself about what you're going through, understand it, because that takes away the fear, that takes away almost takes away some of the feeling of I'm losing control, I don't know what's going on, that uncertainty. At least you can say, okay, what I'm going through right now is awful, but I can label it, or I understand it, or I know there's other people out there with it. So that's kind of my first big tip. The second one would be around making sure that you educate yourself in terms of what daily practices you can do to make sure you create the right environment for good mental health. So really basic stuff, you know, the kind of stuff you talk about on your podcast, exercise, making sure that you connect with other people, making sure you take time to do something you love, things that make you laugh, that kind of thing. But also things like having time away from your screens, away from social media. That for me has been really important. Making sure that you have something, you know, it doesn't work for everyone, but something like a mantra or some kind of saying, repeat yourself when you start to feel like that. The third big area I would say is recognizing that you're never gonna feel happy all the time. That's just not possible. Maybe there's someone out there like that. I haven't met. And so it's reframing the times that you feel bad. And so instead of saying to yourself, oh, I've had a really bad day, that means I'm not getting better, that means I'm weak, I'm never gonna get over this, I'm stuck with this for life. Mm-hmm. It's learning to live with it and seeing the goal as getting better and better at handling the shitty days rather than never having them. And I think that's been a huge challenge for me. At first I was obsessed with this idea of a post-intrusive thought world where I could have perfect mental health and wow, I'll be able to do all these things and my life will be perfect. And now I'm actually like, okay, what would a wonderful, beautiful, strange life look like with intrusive thoughts? But that can apply to everyone. What would your life look like if you said, okay, there will be days, they're gonna happen, or hours or weeks or months even, where I'm not quite myself, and that's okay, I can still live a fantastic life within that. I think those things are great. I'm a huge journal fan. I love writing my journal.
Me too.
The best. I'm a huge Headspace fan, so I do a lot of meditation. I mean, I know it's one of those things that for some people they feel like it's just another thing on their to-do list and they end up beating themselves up about it. Oh, I'm not being very good at self-care, I'm not being very good at meditation. It shouldn't become like that. If it's a should, get rid of it. Like, it shouldn't be a should. But I think that it's something that if you have these things and see them almost like you're armoring up, that's the kind of image I have in my head.
I love the idea.
You're getting a shield, you're getting a sword, you're getting a helmet, and you're putting these things on, and they're going to make you stronger. But they're a choice, and they're something you can choose to do every day. They shouldn't be something that you feel you have to do. And I think those kinds of images, in terms of understanding what you're going through, with either seeing yourself as being at the bottom of the ocean or seeing yourself as armoring up, can be helpful. And a good one for mental health in general is, instead of seeing it as a kind of, and I say, a dark cloud that descends, I like to see it as like an annoying puppy that sometimes the room and starts attracting you. actually, it just needs you to kind of calm it down and listen for a moment and just say, actually, I'm getting on with this. Right now, I'm doing an interview, or right now, I'm writing this, or I'm working. If you want to be here, fine, but you're going to have to sit and be quiet because I'm getting on with this. Yeah. And that, for me, is a much more comfortable kind of image and narrative to have. And again, it comes back to, I think, giving yourself agency, giving yourself a kind of active role in it, where you're saying, okay, I may not be able to have a choice as to whether I have sometimes bad mental health, mm-hmm. but what I do have a choice about is how I can deal with that, how I can see it, how I can understand it, and how I can react to it.
Yeah, no, that's great. I absolutely love the, I love visualization in any kind of form, but I think I find it really helpful, and that's such a good one. I love the idea of armoring up. That's brilliant. It's a really, really good one. And one thing I want to ask you about, and this feels like it's partly my ignorance, but it's just something around mental health that I haven't fully gotten my head around. I'm just interested what your thoughts are on this. Is how much of it is, and then, you know, sometimes people talk about having like a chemical imbalance or something in the mind, or that it's something that some people have and it's just because of the way the brain functions. And how much of it is influenced by situational stuff? Because I think what I found was, this is going back to me Googling stuff. So I remember when I was Googling postnatal depression when I was after I had Finley, and because it was like, I was asking myself, like, I've had a premature child who's got a life-threatening heart condition, who won't sleep, who I'm having to like tube feed and breastfeed, and I feel like I want to just check out of my life right now. And I kind of thinking, like, how much is this just not because I'm in this really horrible situation, I just need to see through the end of it, or is it because the process of having a child and my hormones is messed up, is doing something to my head? And I think. And then I don't know which is more helpful, which isn't. But that's just something I've always questioned personally, depending on where I am. And sometimes it's been like, actually, I need to reflect on what needs to be shifted in my life to help me feel better. But then other times I think it's affected by all sorts of internal stuff. Any thoughts? Does that even make sense?
No, I completely understand what you're saying. And I think it's really interesting, and without trying to get too deep, it's almost a philosophical question, isn't it? How much of this is my hormones and not me? How much of it is actually me? How much of it is just a product of my nature, of my nurture? Is it environmental? All of these questions are things that the experts debate. So I don't think there's a solid answer as to why do people get something like intrusive thoughts, or why do people have bipolar, or where do these things come from? And I don't think there is one answer. I think my guess is, although again definitely not an expert, would be it's going to be a mix of those things. It will be a mix of your genes, your hormones, your environment, your personal experiences, how you interpret things, your childhood, those kinds of things. I think when it comes to like a specific thing you're going through, I always again come back to the thing of what for you is the helpful way of seeing it. Because if we don't have a scientific, final, objective answer, then it's, well, have a choice. Pick the one that for you makes sense at that time. And I think for me, if I'm feeling really rubbish, I'll look at things like, okay, well, where am I in my cycle? What are my hormones doing? Is it going to be something to do with that? Have I had enough sleep? And I find that reassuring, because then I'm like, oh, okay, it's not just me. And I'm using inverted commas there for the which they won't be able to see, but I think it will be something that you kind of learn better as you go through that. But I definitely always look to those things, and I think actually, you know, if I'm suddenly questioning, you know, the big questions in life, am I in the right place, am I living in the right place, am I doing the right thing, instead of thinking I'm having a genuine crisis because those are proper questions I should be asking, I start thinking, actually, I didn't sleep last night. I haven't had any breakfast yet. Yeah. Maybe I'll sort those things out first and come back to it once I'm showered and I feel a little bit calmer. And then I often find that the questions I'm asking myself or the internal dialogue I'm having is a lot better. I think also on the whole internal dialogue thing, it's really interesting that I think I read somewhere that apparently the kind of the lifespan of an emotion is 1.5 minutes going through your body. I don't understand it fully, but it's really interesting that it's the idea that your thoughts will carry that on. It's your thoughts that carry on that emotion. And actually my yoga teacher says a fantastic thing. She says you can change any mood in 3 breaths. And so I think sometimes it will be those things like actually I can slightly reframe this and I can understand it in a different way. Mm-hmm. But you're right, it's a deep one.
Yeah. No, it's really, actually that's really helpful because I think it does make a lot of sense. I think what it's, and certainly that mirrors kind of my experience, is that, you know, whatever might be underlying, I think it's that self-knowledge, isn't it? That kind of thinking, well, if I don't sleep very well for like 3 nights straight, I might not be functioning, you know, in the way that I want to function. And I think it comes back to that self-knowledge. And really interesting, again, what you say there about emotions and thoughts, and something that I teach on the Mindset Makeover course that I do, is that, you know, we can start and look at our thoughts through reframing and through those things. We can start and change those and therefore start to change the emotions that come up when we think a certain thought, and to start and have that. And I think it's important, I suppose, I think for a lot of us to know that we can, you know, through things like that and through not getting to know ourselves more, have an impact on our mental health and our mental well-being, but not saying that we shouldn't turn to professional help, because it's about all of that, isn't it? It's about using all of the tools absolutely. That we have.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that's really interesting. And I think that in terms of looking at your thoughts, it's about almost seeing your mind, well, one of the other images I have, is seeing your mind a bit like a garden, and you're constantly checking it. You're constantly making sure the right thoughts are growing, that your right patterns in your mind are there, that you're pruning out anything that isn't helpful, and that you're kind of almost like a guardian of it. You're kind of protecting it. You're making sure that you're having helpful, constructive thoughts. I think as well, it's really important to look at a range of different ways of helping yourself. Exactly like you said, I would never have recovered and to the extent that I have, if I'd just had a permanent kind of professional therapy. It's definitely also been talking to friends and listening to podcasts like yours, where I'm just getting in place those foundations for general well-being. It's been creating and writing about my experiences and sharing them with others and helping others. I think that's another really important part of mental health that often gets missed, is that actually work or serving is a really important part of recovery, and that's often missed. I wouldn't, if I'd been just given a kind of, you know, don't go to school anymore, don't work, you're never going to do any of these things anymore, just focus on getting better, that would have been, for me anyway, detrimental, because for me I needed to be out there feeling purposeful. That's obviously not the case for everyone, but I think it is important to have that element as well.
Yeah, oh absolutely. I think it's, I suppose what's coming out is just the, for me, it seems to be coming down to this whole thing about getting to know what's right for you and what's going to work for you, and not letting the, you know, any stigma around it prevent you from getting help if you feel that you need it. And and I think, I mean, overall, it's just about everyone having this better understanding of it, isn't it? And I think for people to have that, I guess more people have to talk about it and be open about it and be prepared to share their experiences, because and I mean, again, I think the degrees of it, and I know when I, you know, I've spoken about going back a good few years ago when I had what I would confidently say I had was orthorexia, which is a mental health issue. It's not, you know, and talking about that as well, because there is such crossovers, I think, with certainly with food and you know, with some eating disorders as well, and just having this general conversation about our mental well-being has been such an important part of well-being in general. Because I think that was the thing for me. I think from my experiences, but there was that I was all about the health, but not about the mental health at all.
Yeah.
And I think if I'd actually really looked at that in depth and realised what it was doing, I mean, that's an interesting thing as well. Perhaps just to get your opinion on that, whereas for people, like, for example, for me, certainly with orthorexia, I didn't, like, when I was in it, I didn't realise I had a problem.
Yeah.
And I don't know how, and I guess for people with anxiety and things like that, you tend to know what it is that you're going through and experiencing, but is there any, I mean, have you got any experience of any mental health issues, or perhaps any just advice for people who perhaps get to a certain point and then look and say, I've been in this for a while and I didn't realise it was a problem, but now it is. How do I start handling this? Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I think that can be a strange moment. I don't know how it felt for you, but I'd imagine it would be a kind of mix of relief that you kind of knew what was happening, but almost a sadness for yourself then. I can't believe I was going through that.
I think I was, because, and again, this is what really gets me about mental health stuff in general. You know, I was a professional, you know, working woman, functioning, you know, really well as a project manager and a good job, yeah. and yet this thing took me over, and I didn't even realise it. And that was the, it was, I think, realising it was scary, and I was a bit ashamed of it, to be honest. Yeah. And I still am sometimes, to be honest, because, you know, it's not like, and I mean, again, and this is certainly not wanting to come across disrespectful, but again, a lot of eating disorders, you know, it tends to be younger women, and there's this whole, I mean, there's been a bit of discussion around this, around that Netflix film that's came out. I think it's, I can't remember what it's called now, but there's a Netflix documentary come out about how it's, you know, it's very much, you know, the stereotype is young white women. And I think I had that stereotype. I was just like, well, this can't be happening to me. I'm like 29, yeah. I'm married, I'm, you know, I just didn't think it was happening to me. And I think that that's quite a difficult thing to deal with for people. But I don't know whether or not there's any other, because I think for eating disorders, I think that's, it is that thing where I think women are in it and they don't really realise it for some of them.
Yeah.
Especially with orthorexia, because it's not, like, I think if you, you know, with, and again, I'm certainly not speaking as an expert by any means, but, you know, there's obviously certain behaviours with anorexia and bulimia that are classic of those of those disorders. But with orthorexia, it's a big, fluffy, grey area, you know. But I think that's quite an interesting one for people to have to deal with. And I don't know if you've got any advice for people who are, maybe they're just, it's just dawning on them that their mental health isn't great.
Yeah. I think I can completely understand what you're saying about the fear and the shame and the confusion as well, because the rest of my life is great. On, you know, look at it on paper. I was, you know, winning at life, whatever you want to call it. Perfect. And I think that is one of the huge misunderstandings, is that people who have bad mental health will look a certain way, will be a certain way, probably won't be succeeding at all in any aspect of their life. We have these huge assumptions about it and prejudices. I think if you're suddenly thinking, oh gosh, actually I've got this problem, it can feel really, really overwhelming. And what I would say is, you're not alone. There are lots of people out there that will be experiencing this or have experienced this and will be at different stages along that journey of recovery. You've just entered a fantastic, scary, but important part of it, which is realizing that you want to do something about it and that you think you know what's going on. That's a good thing. That's a positive thing. And there's loads of help out there, making sure you use the right kind of resources. Speaking to, if you're in the UK, speaking to your local GP is a great way of starting. But again, making sure that you have the confidence to speak to someone else if you feel that they couldn't give you the support you needed. Talking to someone you trust is really important. I think also reminding yourself that it's a strong thing to have realized this, and that self-discovery and self-development and the understanding that your life is not necessarily exactly how you wanted it to be right now is a really important and natural thing, and that it's a, you know, it's a sign of bravery that you're going to do something about that. But it is really hard. It's really scary, and it takes time. I think that's the other big thing. I'm still not finished with this, I don't think. I still have really, really bad days all the time, even though now I, you know, I've got a podcast. There'll never be a point at which you're finished kind of discovering this about yourself and dealing with it. And I think coming to terms with that, but seeing that actually there might be some really great things that come out of this as well. You never know. You can make new friends or reach new levels of depth with current friendships or family members. You may end up building this into your career or helping others. I think there could, it's hard, I don't want to kind of romanticize mental health by any means, but there can be things that are good that come out of having that experience.
No, absolutely. I think that's really important to remember, isn't it? But
and would you say,
sorry, you go on.
I was going to say, and would you say that you found that, because as someone that listens to your podcast, it's fantastic that someone that I listen to that speaks from a place of expertise and advice is also open about the fact that they have that. So for me, it's been really beneficial. Obviously, not to be, it's really important that people in that people that are, you know, succeeding in so many ways will also, it's again that Brené Brown thing, will be happy to be vulnerable and will say that about themselves. And that's what makes the online community so strong, isn't it? It's that sense of openness and trust and sharing.
Yeah, it absolutely is. I think it's, I think it can be hard. I think for me, I guess I'm, sometimes I just think I'm such a gobshite. I don't think I could not, I can like hide much, to be honest. I think generally how it goes, like, I'm happy to just talk about whatever. And I've talked about before about you know, being a health coach and not being very thin, and about being okay with that. And then I've talked more recently about how actually I think I do want to lose some weight, but I feel really guilty for that because, I, you know, shouldn't we all be about body positivity right now? And and I think these are like the important, these are the important conversations. Like, and you know, I think there's some amazing stuff online and there's some amazing stuff going on, but, you know, there's not one thing is right and not one thing is wrong. Is what's right to me is people being authentically them and being and to definitely go back to Brené Brown's work, is to being vulnerable to them and about what their experiences are, because that's all we've got in this world, isn't it, is our is our lived experience. And and I don't think feeling guilt or shame about any of it is helpful for anyone, especially not yourself. So I think it just makes such a difference to have like these kind of conversations, and again, I think mental health is something that is just for so long being so misunderstood and being so stigmatized and being so left out of the general wellness conversation. And I mean, and again, I think when I talk about stuff like mindset and I talk about stuff like self-care, it's all really with, and I guess this is something I probably need to be a bit more explicit about, it's all actually with mental health and mind just as much as physical health, if not more. Because you know, like, we know that meditation can kind of help, but obviously meditation helps with stress, and that does have a physical effect, but the mental effect is much, much bigger. You know, it's, I think that's where so much of it is actually happening with our well-being now, and it's brilliant that, you know, people like yourselves are starting podcasts and talking about that. And I'd love to actually, just before we wrap up as well, just find out a bit more about the podcast and about what you talk about. So just for people who are listening, it's the Mad Women Podcast. I wanted to ask as well, calling yourself mad, and you said that your boyfriend sometimes just says you're a bit more mad than other people. Obviously I'm presuming that you don't see that as an insult, but is that because you're calling it yourself? Or is that you empowering that term?
With the name, it was Ruth that came up with the name, and I loved it as soon as she said it. That's brilliant. Has to be called that, because I think there's a kind of stigma about the crazy old lady or the mad woman, or like, women are just, they're just crazy. And there's something about actually bringing a bit of humor into the conversation, a little bit of strangeness, making that okay, not taking yourself too seriously, and having some of that in the conversation was something we really wanted, because for us, the podcast is all about having a different kind of conversation, a different kind of space and community for mental health, but specifically for kind of anxiety and intrusive thoughts. We found that what we kind of wanted to do has always been about having that conversation, making it really genuine. We're both people that have gone through this and lived through experiences, but also we're not experts. So it's very much more of a kind of informal, chatty conversation. I think that I should probably say we're still new. We're starting out. We're amateurs. Our sound quality isn't always perfect.
I'm sure you'll be absolutely fine.
And one of the best bits about it has been the people that have got in touch with us and the people that we've met through doing it, and people saying, I've had this experience or that experience and I'm really interested in this or that. And it's been amazing. There are so many people out there that are interested in this and that want to help be part of that change and that movement of increasing awareness and increasing support for these conditions. And we've also, you know, there are a few blog posts and stuff on there, but mainly it's about having that space where people can get in touch with each other, where we have a weekly chat about things like our top tips for mental health, or we've done things on morning routines. We're both big Miracle Morning fans.
Yes,
so we've talked
about
that. We do things as well on kind of bigger topics, like what actually is anxiety. We do things that are kind of meant to be a bit more practical, like some strategies that we use. So it's a mix of things, but it, like I said, it's evolving and we're pretty new, so we'll see where it goes. But
that's brilliant.
Very excited about
it's
it.
It's really exciting. So just to remind us, so it's madwomenpodcast.blog.
Yeah, that's right.
That's the word. And can people find you on iTunes?
So we're coming to iTunes soon. We're just, our RSS feed has been submitted, but we're not on there yet.
Exciting.
So we're mainly on it. On our website, and also we can be found on Twitter and on Facebook as well.
Yeah. So on Twitter, you are at the Mad Women Pod, which I love.
Yeah. And I'm also at Becca_Valander as well, where I post a lot of stuff as well. And on Facebook, we're Mad Women Pod.
Brilliant. And then Ruth's blog as well about anxiety, which looks fabulous, is 1,000 ways to be fearless. That's 1,000 in the number, ways to be fearless.com. And we'll put the links, everyone, in the show notes at wholeandhealthylive.com. But thank you so much. This has been absolutely, this has been so interesting. I think I could ask you loads more questions. So we might have to get you back on in a couple of months' time, ask you more questions, because I think this is going to be just a really interesting topic, and I'm looking forward to getting the feedback from the listeners on this one actually as well. And just to say, obviously, if anyone is suffering, and I don't even like to use that word, but if anyone's living with some mental health issues, and definitely check out your podcast, because I think, I know many, many women who, especially anxiety and stress, who I think would really benefit from that as well. So thank you so much for being on, Becca.
It's been my pleasure. You, Laura. It's been fantastic. Thank you.
And we'll see you guys, you listeners, next week. Bye.
Bye.